Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
And I said, I want to win the league, but I want to win it better. You can understand that, can't you?
Yes.
Good lad.
So he's almost like having a second captain in the team.
Second captain, first captain, whatever.
It was described by Jackie Tyrrell as the greatest half of hurling he's ever seen by any team. Michael Dignan saw the type of goal that no other hurler in history could have scored. Even the opposition manager had to admit his team had been annihilated. I think it's fair to say Limerick's second half comeback yesterday left a bit of an impression on anybody who saw it. Welcome to Monday's Second Captains Podcast. Hey, Murph.
Hey, Owen. How's it going? It was pretty bloody good, all right.
It was impressive. The All-Ireland champion started the second half of the Munster final, 10 points down to tip. By the time of... I think they had that clawed back by the time they had the water
they
break.
They were ahead by the time of the second water break.
So, that's good going. Then they have a few swigs of water. Punishingly hot day. Everybody deserved their few drinks of water. And then they went straight out and scored the goal that had Michael Dignan in raptures on RTE. They enjoyed it on Limerick's Live 95 too.
Kyle Hayes, beaten one, steps past the second, bounces the ball.
Keep going!
He's still going, it's Kyle Hayes.
Keep going, Kyle!
14, Kyle! He goes once more,
Kyle.
He's turned.
Yeah!
The best goal you'll ever see, 222 to 217. You will not see a better goal from Kyle Hayes. Incredible skill. He bounced it three or four times and rattled the back of the net. Limerick in front by five.
Ah, that was unbelievable. He started on his own 65.
Shane's outing and Donald Sullivan loving that goal by Kyle Hayes. I don't know how best to describe it. I mean, I'm not sure if I'd go as far as... People do get excited, but as far as what Dignan said in that no player could ever have scored a goal like that. But maybe not many. You know, you do have to have a certain combination of speed, power, athleticism, skill, and composure to pull off what he pulled off.
You know, funny enough, like, since you said that, I'm like, well, you know, come on, Michael. And then the more, I mean, I can't name the player that I think could have scored. I mean,
Austin Gleeson?
That is a pretty good shout, to be fair.
I feel like Austin Gleeson has scored goals like that. Like, not only could score, but has scored goals like that.
Yeah, well, not from that far back, maybe.
Yeah, so tell people about this. He took a hand pass well inside his own half.
Yeah, beautiful little hand pass from Keane Lynch on his own 45. And then he just started running. And if you've seen Kyle Hayes run, it's actually quite a beautiful thing to watch. because he is quick, but he's also gigantic. So he's like marauding up the left, the Limerick left wing. And he's handled the ball a couple of times already. So he bounced the ball off the ground, back onto his hurl, twice. And the course of this, like, the skill required to do this is, I mean, you know, there are things, I don't know, when was the last time you picked up a hurley and a slither and just went for like an old poke around? I've been doing it a bit for the last kind of year or so with I'm not a good hurler. My friends are not good hurlers. But there's something beautiful about the, you know, it's like the American father-son throwing catch, basically, you know. There's just something very satisfying about blasting a slither back and forth. And, like, we do something, like, semi-decent, like control the ball and then hit it back without, you know, taking the ball into your hand. And we're just so proud of ourselves. And watching Kyle Hayes do what he did yesterday, like... Putting all of that together at insanely top speed while all these lads are trying to like take your head off. Hurling is a mind-boggling game sometimes, and Kyle Hayes' goal yesterday was mind-bogglingly good when you consider like batting the ball off the ground and back again to ensure that you could get another two touches, but like doing it twice.
So what's the purpose of that? So he starts off by tearing,
you can't
outside.
Handle the ball three times basically.
I know we're really going deep into this goal, but why not? He starts by receiving the hand pass and tearing outside on the left hand side outside a Tipperary player, then cutting back inside another player, and from that point on is when he starts batting the ball down off the ground.
Yeah, and you can't take the ball into your hand three times. But if you bat the ball off the ground, then that gives you another two times to be able to take the ball into your hand. And basically, you take the ball into your hand so that a player can't come across and swipe the ball off your hurley. So it just basically allows you to swerve and take fouls on and not be afraid of losing the ball off your hurley. So I mean, you know, there's like a skill level to it. It opens up all these possibilities as well for like how you can take on a guy and feign past a guy. And like he's doing all this at ridiculously high speed, and the guy's a wing back, and you know, the composure at the end to finish with his hurley upside down, the boss of his hurley upside down. it is a pretty bloody good goal.
I enjoyed the pointless shimmy he did at the end. There was nobody left to shimmy, and he still did a little bit of a...
Well, at that stage, he's shimmying the goalie. He's giving the goalkeeper the eyes as well there. I know. So, I mean, just ridiculous. And, you know, after the thing about it was that Tipperary did basically everything right in the first half. They were 10 points up, and, like, I know Henry Shefflin was saying they've given themselves too much to do. I was watching it going, this second half is going to be good. And it was. Because, I mean, I honestly thought it would take a little longer than it did for Limerick to... But, like, Limerick were 10 points behind. By the time of the second water break, halfway through the second half, the game was over. In Limerick's favour. And that in itself is just... Yeah, I mean, it was... I mean, Jackie Tyrrell may have been calling it the greatest half of hurling ever played by anyone. I mean, it's probably in the top 10, all right. It was... Absolutely unbelievable. I mean, Tipperary offered only token resistance, to be fair, but it was sensational.
We're going to be talking to Jamie Wall and Derek McGrath about that. And the other big hurling story, David Fitzgerald, beaten by his ex-teammate turned mortal rival, Brian Lowen, as Clare knocked Wexford out of the qualifiers. And Davey sounded off afterwards, firstly saying that the way he and his family have been treated by a small bunch of people in Clare is an absolute and utter disgrace. His father is the chairman, isn't he, the Clare County Board? So, but he was going deep into the whatever internal politics are going on in Clare hurling, even though he's the Wexford manager at the moment. He was getting involved in all that kind of stuff. The way I felt all week, I didn't even know if I wanted to come into this game, to tell you the truth. But he came, he played, he talked afterwards, and then he addressed the feud with Lowen.
People said to me, would you ever talk to Brian Lowen again or any of this? I'll tell you straight out, straight for the sake of Clare, 110%. If someone got a meeting with me and Brian Lowen tomorrow, I'd do it. Not, I mightn't like Brian Lowen, and I mightn't have much time for him and the way he does stuff. He wouldn't have it, he'd have the same for me. But we shouldn't be at each other in Clare. If Clare to succeed, they all need to be together. And I'm saying it straight now. Would I put it to bed? I'd stand up in the morning and I'd go talk to anyone and I'd shake hands and I'd put it to bed. 110%. I don't want Clare to be fighting with one another.
It's just, I don't know, maybe once you get into it, maybe once you're so deep into a feud, it's hard to see the wood from the trees. It's hard to actually just spot the guy standing a few yards away and... realizing you can just go over and talk to him now if you want. It doesn't have to be this big summit set up behind the scenes. You don't need these third parties coming in. And if someone got us, you know, in some ways you could say he's extending the olive branch there, but in other ways he's still talking about how much he doesn't like Brian Lowen even in the middle of that answer. So it's
you don't need to book out Camp David for the week. It's literally you're one of the two people who can act on this. I mean, you know, and let's not absolve Brian Lowen entirely from his part in all this as well, in that, you know, Brian Lowen is also a grown man who could also pick up the phone. But I mean, it's just, like, at least Lowen's not going around talking about how he wants to bury the hatchet while not burying the hatchet. You know what I mean? It's like, Lowen is like, I don't like the guy, therefore I don't like the guy. That's it. Whereas Davey kind of is talking like there's, like, if only there was some, like, you know, outside external force, like, you know, some deus ex machina that could, like, bring me and Brian Lohan together. You know, what could that possibly be? Maybe, like, a qualifier draw. Maybe a league game in Cusick Park. Or maybe just the mobile phone network. You know, there's 99% coverage, I believe, on nearly all of the networks now. That's 99% coverage population-wise, not geographically.
Sure.
But I mean, even at that, I think there's a very high likelihood that Davy Fitzgerald's house and Brian Lohan's house are both very well served by mobile phone coverage. So really, you know, once we've established the working mobile phone network in this country, I think we're actually closer than we think to a possible solution here. That's all I'm saying, Owen.
Murph, this feud has been going on so long that there are now side feuds simmering in the background. You've got Davy Fitz versus Paul Galvin now. Galvin tweeted, I'm going to read this tweet out because I just love how he calls him David Fitz. David Fitz loves to play the victim when it suits him. He's far from a victim in how he behaves behind the scenes while fronting to the media, and I can personally attest to that. Hope someone in media has guts to ask him hard questions now. Always the victim, never your fault, David. It's just generally Davy, you know, but he's gone for the more formal, I think, David Fitz there.
I think maybe Galvin thinks that, you know, Davy Fitz is like sort of a comic book character of some kind. Do you know what I mean? That like the shortening of the first name gives him perhaps a cuddlier exterior than the rest of the tweet is referring to. So I think that's maybe why he went for David rather than Davy there. But I mean, Paul Galvin was talking on the Irish Examiner GA podcast last month just about the difficulties he had while he was Wexford football manager dealing with Davy Fitzgerald, the Wexford hurling manager. So the antipathy there is
that particular side feud.
We've had an insight into that already this year, but yeah, I mean, maybe there will come a time when Davy Fitzgerald is not the Wexford hurling manager, but I mean, he's going to be someone else's manager.
We need somebody else to get on to Galvin now. That's really going to kick things off once somebody takes issue with Galvin, and then it can just steamroll. Listen, the whole country's going to be at war soon enough by the sentence. It's just myself.
Davy and Lohan can just take a step. They can take a step back. They'll just, they, like the two guys who started a brawl in a Western in the 1940s. They could just slip out the back of the pub, back of the saloon, and everyone else can start throwing chairs at each other.
It's just myself and Murph today. Ken is on a well-earned post-Euros break. Our coverage of the tournament ended up lasting until Friday of last week because US Murph was all in on Italy's win. Non-members, non-World Service members may not know this, but Brian is of Italian stock. His grandparents, to be honest, I didn't really know the details myself until we chatted on Friday. His grandparents, the Di Benedettis, moved over to the US from some little village outside Genoa back in the day. So he was very much cheering on the Azzurri last Sunday while his celebrity friend Billy Bean, the Oakland A's guy of Moneyball fame, played by Brad Pitt in the movie Moneyball, Billy Bean was rooting hard for England.
And he said, well, I'm just here to tell you that it's the Three Lions. It's the month of the Three Lions. They're going all the way. And I said to him, I said, whoa, got to slow your roll on two levels. Number one, Forza Italia, and they're the best team in the tournament, and Mancini's got it going on, and we're going all the way, and they're playing great ball, and they haven't lost the 33 match unbeaten streak or whatever it was at that time, 28 or whatever. And I said, they got the defense, they got the offense, we got chemistry, we got magic, it's all back, we got depth. And he just scoffed, and he goes, you don't know what you're talking about. England is the best team in the tournament. And then it started, what I didn't realize is that he really took pride in his prediction, because then he started, and this never happened before, he started texting me, England is going to, he goes, I hate to tell you this, but England's going to dominate this match. England is so far the superior side. And then England scores 2 minutes in. And I won't lie, for about a minute and a half, I was not a happy camper. And I was I gripped a little bit. But then by minute four or five, guys, honestly, if you can go back and check the text thread, I had reasserted myself and I was like, this thing ain't over and we're coming. And
you're,
I was like, you know what?
You're full of shite, Billy Bean. That's what you were saying. You're drinking the England Kool-Aid. I just love it.
Well, he was hitting me with this. He was hitting me with all the phrases that you guys use, like England, because after Italy scored to tie it, he said, well, that's okay, because Italy are on the front foot now. And I was like, what is this? Like, this is not how Americans talk. You don't talk like that. I don't know what the front foot is, you know? But of course, I know it means they're on the attack. But anyway, he was calling himself Nostra Venus when England scored. He said, Nostra Venus has struck again.
Yeah, Nostra Venus didn't have all the answers, it turned out. US Murph was highly invested in the Azzurri. So much so that we barely talked about the NBA that we were actually supposed to talk about last week.
He really was. He was very happy with how last Sunday worked out.
That chat is available to World Service members right now. You guys will also be treated to Michael Cheka joining Shane Horgan during the week to talk about the first Lions test against South Africa. Paul Flynn has been a great new addition to our Gaelic football chats. He's going to be on with Oisin tomorrow to, well, you know what he's going to be talking about. Everyone writing off the Dubs. It's not just clickbait clerking in the Irish Times. You've got Tomás O'Shea at it. Everybody's at it now. So we'll talk to Flinner about that. I haven't called him Flinner. I don't know why I said Flinner there. I'm just, the Dub in me is rising up, Murph, at the moment.
Yeah. We're going to have to quell that, Owen. And I'm just sure, as quickly as it rose there, we're going to have to quell that.
I'm sure O'Shane will have plenty to say about the drama in Newry, where Monaghan scored four goals early on against Armagh. Still needed a late score to actually win the bloody thing, but that was amazing, and obviously
the greatest Ulster Championship game ever played on.
Yeah, well, it's pretty exciting, all right. And the Olympics opening ceremony is on this Friday, so there's a lot of sport going on this week. That's my pitch. You can sign up now on secondcaptains.com to hear all the coverage. It only costs £5 a week plus VAT.
Modern day coaching, what is it all about? Paralysis by analysis, infiltrated by a load of spoofers and bluffers, fellas with earpieces stuck in their ears, psychologists, Clive Woodward, statisticians, dietitians, and as Mick O'Connell alluded to, God save us.
Jamie Wall and Derek McGrath are on today to see if they can add a few more superlatives to describe Limerick's comeback yesterday. Jamie, hope you're well.
Good. Owen, how are you?
Good, good, good. Looking forward to this chat. Derek, first time I think we've talked to you this summer. How are you keeping?
Good form now. Thanks, Owen.
Good, good. I should say that we're recording this at just after 9 a.m. on Monday morning, and already I'm starting to feel a few beads of sweat on my forehead given the heat outside. So I don't know, Derek, how the teams, I don't know how Tip managed to produce what they produced in the first half, but more to the point, how Limerick managed to play with that level of ferocity that they played with in the second half yesterday in those kind of conditions. It was pretty extraordinary stuff.
Yeah, savage heat there, and yeah, I think, look, John Kiely spoke afterwards about, I think, the physical commitment they kind of agreed to give at halftime as a catalyst probably for the performance. First, they're a little bit, they're just blown out of it by a brilliant Tipperary performance in the first half. And but this third quarter, like, will be used as a kind of, I think, not alone a coach Emmanuel, but just a, I suppose, a demonstration of what can happen and what they can do. And the debate will be now surrounding, I suppose, just controlling the hype that will surround that performance going forward for Kiely and co.
So what about it in particular? I mean, if you were using it this morning as a coaching clinic, aside from the, as you said, the physical side of it and on all the stuff that you have to produce, the type of hurting they played, what did they do in those sort of 15, 17 minutes that turned everything on its head?
Well, they're probably contributing factors beforehand in Gillan being, you know, that kind of go-to man on the edge of the square that gives them a different focal point. And Dan Morrissey probably acting as a bit more of a kind of a physical foil to Shamie Callan. Tipperary were going very long in the puckets in the first half. And when Morrissey and Gillan came in, not that it was a turning point, but there was a bit of a steadying there. Limerick were going a little bit longer than they would normally, and they look a little bit more disjointed. Dan McCormack was taking up Keane Lynch, and Brendan Maher was effectively playing as a seventh defender, if you like, or a sweeper. So I think, you know, what they did was, as I said, the physical engagement first of all, but they went back to playing their game. They went back to the extra couple of passes. And then the outlet ball to Gillan, he can win it one against two. He can win it one against three. He's just different, you know. He's a different foil. And they came a bit deeper. Garrod Hegarty, Tom Morrissey, Keane Lynch. They just came a bit deeper. And when they're deep and their men are with them, Gillan is able to win it one against two or one against three. And they're deep and their men are not with them, they're able to score. So I think that they went back to their game, you know, what they're good at. And allied to that, obviously, was the ferocity they brought to it too. So... And I think someone pointed out yesterday, it was kind of not a victory for investment, but I thought not the noticeable difference between S&C and the strength and condition. I know it's easy to talk about it afterwards, but Kyle Hayes and what they did in terms of the physicality that they brought to it and the way they were still going at the end of it was, there has to be something in that. There has to be something in that kind of professionalism, I suppose, of their performance in the second half.
Yeah, there's kind of a lot to unpick there, Jamie, isn't there? Because... you know, a lot of times when you see a game kind of two halves like that, or a performance of two halves like that, it can kind of come down to, you know, our heads were nowhere near it, and then in the second half, you know, something was the switch was flicked. But there's a lot there, like personnel wise, tactics wise, and then the intensity as well. But I mean, there's also, you'd have to say the Gillan incident, Gillan not getting sent off, was a huge turning point in this game, because the comeback hadn't really started when that incident occurred. And it's, you know, judging by what Derek said there and what we saw yesterday, Gallan is so important for this team that for all that, for all the S&C, for all the tactical nous that Limerick have, you go down to 14 men, 9 points down or 8 points down as they were in that situation. It's still very tough to see Limerick win that game.
Yeah, it probably is curtains if he gets the line. And I was hoping you'd go to Derek on this one, because obviously, you know, I have a big affiliation with Gallan and that, but I can't really Arsene Wenger it now, to be fair. It was look, it was a sending off, and like what confused me about it was I don't know why he booked him. Because if you booked him, then it means you've seen something, and if you've seen it, like you know the Pat Ryan incident where it's high and it could be a red card, that's one of those ones you can kind of forgive a ref for. And like I've been on here trying to forgive referees lately for decisions, but I can't really understand how you could see it and consult with your linesman and then come to a decision that like why is he booking him? What's going in the referee's report? I'm booking him for striking back with the hurley, do you know, like, well, that's a red card, like, so yeah, like without laboring, like, you know, I don't think there's a need to labor the decision too much because it's so bloody obvious. Do you know, even the biggest Gallan fans in the world like me will say, yeah, that was definitely a red card. And like what Derek said then, like, and I think it's a team that's going to run through a lot of our conversation today. Like, I actually think there's a lot of similarities across the games in terms of things Derek's saying from a coaching point of view. Like, if you want to look at like the Limerick Gallan option, you can and we will apply that to Clare Wexford, where having a ball on the edge of the square allows you to run the ball, and not having it means that there's no threat inside. Like Limerick having that option inside meant that they were able to get a bit more joy when they did run the ball through the middle, because after 5 minutes, the Tipperary defenders were like, okay, I actually do need to mind the house a small bit more because your man is in there behind me, and if he's left one-on-one or even one-on-two, we're in trouble. Compare that with Wexford, we'll say, early doors, they had nothing inside, and as a result, Clare were able to squeeze them and they ended up driving ball over the sideline. Then you want to talk just, and I suppose I'm going into unpicking some of what Derek was saying, like, and about the S&C side of it, like, and I think from a Limerick perspective, the current crop are now, if you look at, we'll say, their first academy crop, they're all 26, 25, 26, 27 now. Like, that's the investment, really, is that over the last 10, 12 years, those players have been brought through a really, really solid, really well-organized system where the basics of strength and conditioning, the basics of movement, the basics of all these things are so good and so strong that when they get to senior level, they can achieve a higher ceiling than everyone else. Because, like, I know for a fact, Tips S&C is very, very good. It's Carbrough Carillon from Belfast. I know he was lauded after 2019. And he's doing a very good job with them, and they're in way better condition than they were in 2018. I don't know if you remember them back then. They weren't physically at the peak of their powers. They're in way better condition. Guys like Bubbles O'Dwyer are in great condition at the moment. But the Limerick lads have 10, 11 years at it, you know, and that is huge. Like when you look across at other sports such as rugby, you know, especially, which is kind of the one that we're always following in the GA. We're always about 5 or 6 years behind, but we're always following it. It's about the base that they have as much as anything else. So I think, yeah, like that's just to go a small bit to trying to unpick that whole thing.
And I mean, you know, you want to talk about physicality and athleticism. Like Kyle Hayes' goal is, you know, it's just a picture perfect example of it, you know. And like I thought the putting Michael Breen on him was such a good move by Tipperary, by Sheedy. He got that right. And you know, but at the same time, there's not a lot you can do with a guy who's as good at as that, and as athletic as that, and as powerful as that. Like, you know, if you fall asleep for 2 seconds on him, that's what's going to happen. And what happened was like a 60-yard run and a goal scored with the boss of his hurl upside down. Like, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and look, I don't know what happened that Dan McCormick was tracking him. I'm not sure was there a change. I was trying to watch it back this morning that, you know, Breen had just left him. I thought Breen was doing really well on his defensive wing forward duties there for most of the game. Like, you know, it was working, I suppose, and it was good plan and a good file. You know, he's first play, actually, Kyle went down to the left wing and Breen tracked and got a good hook on him at the last second, and the ball drifted wide, and it was clear that, you know, that it was working. But look, force in nature. What do you say? You talked about superlatives earlier on, so I'm not going to really add to them other than I think it was a good combination of skill as well. The ball was hopped off the ground twice. There was a beautiful sidestep where he went inside somebody. It wasn't just raw power and pace. It was guile. It was skill. It was all everything combined. And look, just an interesting one on to go back, I suppose. I thought Graham Mulcahy's reaction when he came off kind of summed up the Limerick approach as well. He was really, you know, sometimes you see a guy coming off after, you know, having a strop after 20-odd minutes. You know, it was clear that Kiley needed to do something. He was getting Gillan on the pitch. And I just saw Graham come off like he was very, very kind of gracious, like shook hands. You know, I know you see that sometimes with Jim Gavin over the years where a guy is pulled off, but I just thought that was a kind of reflection of the camp in general. You know, I was just watching Graham Mulcahy in the celebrations afterwards. And you know, a fella obviously has a natural disappointment as to how he might go. The talk was that he was going really well in the run-up to the training. And obviously that would be the situation. That's the reason he was picked. And I thought that kind of fit into the kind of overall picture. Even Dan Morrissey, you know, guys would be cheesed off at not playing. And, you know, and their reaction, I thought, when they come on and when they came off, you know, I thought there was a difference in the Tipperary approach when they come off. I thought I could see Bubbles having a few words with Eamon O'Shea or, you know, when they came off, he was pointing out to the field. And I just thought there was a little bit of a difference there in terms of the overall sense of what Limerick give and the camp that they have, if you like. I thought there was a small bit of a hint towards, you know, what Kiley brings and what the camp is about, if you like.
Which leads me to think that they'll probably be okay in terms of the hype that Derek mentioned, Jamie. I mean, they've had that really for the last few years and they've been okay with it so far. So they should be fine, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they will be. And like, they're an incredibly well managed and an incredibly well coached team. I think that was the big thing you saw yesterday. Like even, you know, like Tip played so well in the first half and it wasn't working for Limerick. But when you think about it, like, and again, this is probably another team that'll go through things, like they just stayed in touching distance. Now, I know it's just about touching distance, but they didn't panic. They didn't, you know, a lot of teams, when you get behind like that, it's kind of like, oh, kitchen sink, early doors. They were like, yeah, 75 minutes to play here. Like, they got 10, 11 scores on the board, you know. And it just shows how well they manage within a game. And I think they bring that kind of, you know, all these buzzwords like process and all these things, but they bring it so much to what they do that it really, you know, a lot of people, I suppose, you know, I think the sound bed, the audio bed, Does Pat Spillane go on about paralysis by analysis and all that stuff? Like, but like, really, like, when you talk about processes and systems and all those things, what they actually do sometimes is when a player is playing badly or when a game is going like that, they give a player a kind of just a crutch and a structure for 5-10 minutes to say, okay, if I keep doing this thing, I'll be fine. And that's what kept them in the game yesterday, so that when they hit that purple patch, they weren't 15, 16 points behind, they were 10 and they could win it. And they bring that same structure and process to everything they do off the field. And that's why, like, if I was a Limerick person, I wouldn't be one bit worried about them. Like, they've had performances similar to this before and it hasn't been an issue. So I think they're going to learn. I think they're going to just continue getting better.
What did Tip do right yesterday, Jamie, that got them that 10-point lead?
A lot. I suppose, like, you know, the big thing for me that they did, and it's probably a thing that Tipperary do better than anyone, is their forwards kind of, like, with the exception of Callanan, who was their focal point, the rest of them kind of like orbited around him like the sun and dropped out to midfield, picked up little pockets of space. Jason Ford, I don't know, was he wing forward, centre forward, midfield? He was kind of in all three at different stages, and it meant that he got lost. At one stage he was supposed to be on Hannon, at one stage he was supposed to be on Will O'Donoghue, and he just got himself lost a load of times. And Tip are probably one of the best, I think, at playing that kind of 30-40 yard game where they find you loose in pockets. Like, they did it to Clare last week. They destroyed the Clare half-back line, particularly John Conlon, who was very good the week before against Waterford. But they found pockets of space off him and picked off 5 or 6 points off him between Bubbles and Jason Ford. Yesterday, it was nearly all Ford in that kind of role.
Is that a weakness with Declan Hannon, do you think?
I don't know if it's a weakness with Declan so much in that, like, it's just his game and he drops off. And what was interesting was yesterday you had Declan and Barry Nash standing beside each other a couple of times, like, basically doing the same job, which meant that they were only doing one job, if that makes sense. And I think what Tip did was tactically I wouldn't say they found Limerick out or sussed them out, but they found a way to get at Limerick very well. Now, the problem, unfortunately for them, and it's kind of getting like that with Limerick, and it's quite like the Dubs in the football, is that you nearly need 2 or 3 different game plans, because if one is going well, they're going to figure you out. Like, Connacht's going to have that board out of the water breaks, which in fairness were called for this weekend. I won't begrudge any man his water breaks this weekend. But they are actually figuring you out in game, and then they get to grips with you. So like, it's nearly like, you know, people are saying about the Dubs that like, you nearly have to have a plan for the first half, be winning at half time, and then go out and change it and have to be brave enough to change it. And it's actually getting like that with Limerick, like, because tactically Tip destroyed them in the first half. Like, they found pockets of space where like nobody finds that space against Limerick. But then, like I said, Limerick just kind of got to grips with it and figured it out and kind of pushed certain men up and got certain things in order. I suppose got their house in order. The thing Derek mentioned as well about having that focal point inside probably gave them structure out the field as well. And then having Dan Morrissey, you know, come into that back line, like, not alone his physicality, which was huge. I mean, early on in the game, I was a small bit concerned about Richie physically with Callanan. It's not a matchup I'd like. But like, not alone his physicality in matching up so well to Callanan, but also just his head. Like, I mean, he took the first puck out. He was just on the pitch and he took a sharp puck out 20 yards from his own goal, and, you know, carries it out, does the right thing. It was like he'd been on the pitch the whole game. And that is difficult for a player going in that heat into Munster Championship, you know, to be like, right, yeah, I'll take the first puck out 20 yards from my own goal. Like, that displays a kind of a calmness that they really do have.
Derek, how damaging is it for Tip that they were on the end of that? I thought Liam Sheedy afterwards looked almost a little bit, he was very magnanimous here. He said we were annihilated in the second half, which you don't normally hear an opposing manager say when they've lost the game. But I suppose there wasn't much else he could say. How damaging is it, do you think?
It's almost more damaging, actually, Owen, if I can come in. You know, if Tip had played badly, then it's like, okay, just write it off. I mean, they did so much right and still got annihilated, as Sheedy said.
Yeah, difficult one to kind of, not to answer, but it's I suppose, his thought process today. You're trying to put yourself in his head. And, you know, interesting just on what Jamie said, which is a lead into the question there that you just asked, which is, I got a text from, you know, a coach here, a local coach here in Waterford after the game saying, you know, you nearly need a second game plan or a third game plan at the start of the second half. He said their corrective analysis is very good. Now, when you say those, you know, and it's the exact point that Jamie has made in terms of, you know, whether it was the start of the second half that instead of having just Callan and Jake Morris inside, it just left Callan alone inside and brought Jake Morris to the middle of the field, flooded even more and disrupted what they knew Limerick would bring. But I suppose the damage to Tipperary, it's hard to kind of quantify. I was just trying to, again, looking back on it this morning before we came on, and, you know, people looked at the animation of Sheedy at halftime. I was just trying to lip read what he was saying. I'm nearly certain he was kind of saying, job half done, job half done. You know, that was the kind of, you know, as he was kind of very, very visibly kind of almost kind of, you know, a mixture of madness and focus, if you like, at halftime. And I was just trying to lip read him there this morning. That's what he was saying. He was saying job half done. So then he comes out and he talks about annihilation, and he used destroyed, I think, this morning as well. I think, or yesterday, he used the word, we were destroyed. So, you know, as a manager, what do? You take away that 35 minutes, that 40 minutes of a buzz that you had from the first 40 minutes, if you like? I think that's what I'd be doing. I'd be picking at those things. But you'd be also looking at the points that we're making as well about, you know, when a team comes with, is it time for us to come with something different? Was the message in the Tipperary dressing room at halftime, keep it going, more of the same? Or should it be, you know, let's go with difference here? And I think that's the takeaway as a manager when you have our debrief today, or, you know. But in terms of damage, I'm not so sure. You know, I'm looking at the draw. I still think Tipperary are one of the top three, four teams in the country. I really do. I still think that Bubbles, Jason Ford, Jamie Callanan, I'm missing someone obvious, Noel McGrath, John McGrath, if he was to come to form, if you like, can still hurt you on any given day. And the draw, I suppose, will be interesting based on what happens between Galway and Waterford and Cork and Clare also.
Yeah, I suppose not many other teams would have put Limerick in that position that they had to come back from 10 points down at halftime. I want to ask you about Clare Wexford, a match obviously that had this simmering feud between the two managers as the backdrop. At this stage, I mean, everyone's probably heard Davey Fitz talking afterwards, when he was talking in one part of his comments about his dad and the criticism that he feels his dad is getting, that's not unwarranted and stuff. But he was talking again about Lowen and how, oh, well, you know, if somebody put us together, I'd have no problem, you know, it should be ended. I mean, to me, it's a lot more simple than that. He was standing beside you 5 minutes before those comments, so you can always walk up and shake a man's hand. Is it a bit of crack, this, or is it a little bit, you know, nonsensical that two grown men are carrying on like this at this stage, Derek?
Yeah, I don't think it's a bit of crack. I think maybe a couple of things, I suppose, is number one, you know, photographers, journalists were awaiting a photograph on Saturday. So maybe in Davy's headspace, he's kind of thinking maybe that's not the space for it. Maybe the time is to meet quietly, you know, in Clare somewhere, or, you know, maybe up the country somewhere, have a chat, get into a room and, you know, sort out their differences. Not even sort out their differences, but kind of just agree to disagree in a non-confrontational way and park it, I suppose, for the sake of everyone. So I don't think that kind of Mick McCarthy meets Roy Keane moment, you know, after the Dutch international game, I think was it where you had the kind of this, you know, this well kind of documented and versed kind of reconciliation process and let's get a photograph here. So I'd respect the wishes of Davy, I suppose, in terms of maybe not orchestrating that on Saturday. Now, having said that, he then doubled down on, you know, I'll meet him anytime, you know. So he kind of went public on it. But, and I'm kind of maybe saying that maybe perhaps he shouldn't have gone, or he wouldn't have wanted to go public on it. So there was kind of a maybe a contradiction in terms of that. Maybe, as I said, the privacy of a phone call or indeed, you know. Now, again, the other thing I would say is that it was involved the weekend and people were talking about the openness of managers after games now. You know, the passion of Kiely yesterday, the openness of Matty Kenny in terms of the transparency he came with around the COVID scene and, you know, how he didn't hide behind it. And Davy's hurt is very obvious, I'd say, in terms of what his, perhaps his family have been through. And I think sometimes that can be, not that it's scorned upon, but we kind of say, here goes Davy again. So it's, there's a balance. You know, it's sometimes when people come with openness and hurt and you express it in that public terms, it can be scorned upon. So I'm in between on it. On the reconciliation between himself and Brian, I think that could be done privately. It could be done in a forum that doesn't allow it to be kind of public and everyone could move on for the sake of Clare hurling in general. But I don't know enough about it in terms of, and ultimately probably speculating about the behind the scenes acrimony, I suppose.
Can I just say on as well, like, and I'm not jumping in on the kind of bashing Davy bandwagon or anything like that, I suppose. This is because I'm not going to speculate either as to him and Brian Lohan. That's their own business. And I suppose, and the carry on in Clare at board level over the last while is Clare's business, really. But I suppose, like, someone has been forgotten in all this, and it's Wexford people and Wexford fans. And look, I don't know about the rest of you, but I would be incredibly pissed off if I was a Wexford hurling person and we're after losing for the second year in a row to Clare in Championship. And all the talk is about my manager and his old team and his old county. And it reminds me of a certain manager over in Italy at the moment who has gotten a new job and who spent his first interview talking about winning 2.5 trophies at Man United and about how fat his left back used to be and things like that. And like, it would grate with me if I was a Wexford person. I'd be kind of saying, great, look, we know you're from Clare, that's what we signed up to, but we're after losing 2 years in a row and there's been a circus going on here and we're in the interview talking about what's best for Clare hurling. Like the bulk of what I read yesterday after the game was Davy talking about what's best for Clare hurling, and that is absolutely fine. Davy's a great Clare man. He's won 2 All-Irelands as a player. He's one of their best players ever. He's won an All-Ireland as a manager. He deserves respect in Clare, whether you like him or not, in my opinion. Like, he does deserve respect there for what he's done in the game down there. But equally, time and a place, honestly, and I know emotions are running high, but if I was a Wexford hurling person, I'd be raging coming away from yesterday like that. We're talking about what's best for Clare hurling. Like, we're after losing 2 years in a row to Clare. Like, what's best for Wexford hurling?
Yeah, it's a fair point. I mean, did it feel, though, like it was such an end of an era feel to the match? You know, it felt like Davy Fitzgerald's last match as Wexford manager. So maybe in that sense, everyone could be forgiven for talking in a different way to if he really intended coming back next year.
It's like, I still think it could have waited till this week. Do you know what I mean? There's enough journalists, Davy's box office, there's enough journalists will take Davy's phone call and do an interview. I'm pretty certain of that. If he wants to speak about these things, I think time and a place. I just think like the focus should have been on Wexford yesterday, and like that for me is the only point that I would make on it, because I don't consider that I have enough information to make any other point on it, and I wouldn't like to speculate on any of the rest of it because it's not my business, frankly. Like, but like, not that Wexford hurling is massively my business, but like, I do think that's something very obvious from the outside that I suppose I was looking at it kind of thinking, Jesus, like, you're the Wexford manager, like talk about Wexford. Like,
Clare have found some support for Tony Kelly, Derek. I mean, when you think back to all, like, Championship previews or that you'd have listened to or read, I mean, the whole thing revolved around Tony Kelly. But looking yesterday, you know, like, or on Saturday, Kelly didn't have an outstanding game by his standards, and yet Clare put up 225. Shanahan's, you know, like, Shanahan, I think, it might be one of these players where in 3 years' time we're still saying, God, if it all goes right for Aaron Shanahan, he could be unbelievable. But I mean, even right now, his production is still pretty good. Aidan McCarthy, Mark Rogers, Taylor, like, they're all starting to chip in, and that's one thing that's, I'm sure, massive news for Lohan.
Yeah, and I suppose any conversation pre-season or even pre-last year would have focused on missing Peter Duggan and Conlon being out injured with the cruciate, and Conlon's now relocation to centre-back. You know, it was kind of... But, you know, you have two dominant forces of their forward and also taken away. But look, I think there's a bit of freedom in that as well in terms of, you know, newer players coming in a little bit under the radar. I like Ryan Taylor, I have to say. I like Ian Galvin, kind of smaller. David Reedy. Like, we played Clare in the 2016 league final and league final replay, and indeed in the championship of that year, and played Clare in Ennis in 18. Reedy was hard to tie down. He's a very good player, like, you know, small, low to the ground. Ian Galvin, extremely good player and underrated. And I think with all the acrimony behind the scenes in Clare, and with the kind of, you know, the focus almost taken away from them, and at the same time, then the likes of Aidan McCarthy and Ryan Taylor and Shanahan come in. On your point of Shanahan, yeah, there's times when he has time and he actually forces a shot. And there's times when he has no time and he actually
Time is completely his enemy. But the last thing he needs is time and space. As it turns out,
100%. And he's a very forceful player. And look, they've mixed it up well. You know, you look at the Waterford game they play with Shanahan and Kelly inside. Ian Galvin fairly withdrawn with Ryan Taylor allowing kind of John Conlon to kind of sit. The next game against Tip Early Doors, they played the three boys inside. So they played Kelly, Galvin and Shanahan inside. And Kelly went in the middle of the field on the weekend, and they were, the rest of the forwards were able to flow, given the fact that he was away from them, if that makes sense. He wasn't the focal point. So the benefits of having him away from it, you know, helped the others, if you like, at the weekend. But yeah, good forward line and a hard-working forward line, but well able to play as well and underrated, I think.
Murph, as Kilkenny's biggest fan, I'm going to ask you about them because you've been a Kilkenny supporter for the last few weeks.
I rang Mam last night for the weekly debrief on the weekend's action, and she was asking me who could possibly beat Limerick, and the answer obviously is Kilkenny, and I've nothing else to back that up other than like the striped jersey. But like they are literally unbelievable. They will never ever quit. And I have to say, like, Saturday evening, it was just the forensic nature with which they dealt with Dublin. Like 4 points. Jamie, you texted me after 10 minutes. It was like, this is how you put to the sword a team that you're expected to beat. It's like the exact opposite of what Galway did. They were 4 points up, I think, after 5 minutes. And for the rest of the game, they were just able to keep Dublin at arm's length. Like when Dublin got level, who gets the next 3 points? Like, it's Kilkenny, of course. And then when the time came for them to put the knife into them, that was that, you know? And that's Kilkenny all over. And I mean, all those teams that are in the qualifiers, I don't think any of them are going to fancy Kilkenny in an Ireland semi-final. Like, they know what they're doing, and it's actually pretty impressive, Jamie.
Massively so, yeah. Like, they're such a good operation. Like, they just they work so hard, but like their decision making is so good. Like, they're a team that have played, like, you know, they're bringing in new players all the time, but they're a team that, like, they feel like they've just always been there, like, you know. But like I said, like, I text you saying this is the anti-Galway, I will say, in terms of the decision making. Like, it meant that every time Dublin hit a purple patch, at best they were getting level. Like Dublin's big purple patch, I mean, Chris Crummy had a great score and let out a massive roar, and it was like this, you know, it was like, God, this could be the thing. But like, it made it 9-all, whereas, you know, a couple of weeks ago against Dublin, or against Galway, apologies, that made it like 12-9, or, you know, like 13-9, and it meant that Galway were chasing, like, whereas Kilkenny just, it was just, they were like a boxer. It's like, yeah, we've gotten ahead now. It was like, Earl, just keep you at arm's length, pick you off with jabs, 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 and then literally, like, then the penalty in the sin bin, bang, goal. I think they were 7 points up when they had it, bang, penalty, 10 points, man sent off, game over. The game is done here. Like, and like, it was just a real lesson in just game management. Like, they just kept getting scores. Like, they got scores on the board, and it's so important. Like, but I mean, the other thing, like, that you just have to say about Kilkenny, and like, I think every time Kilkenny play now, there's going to be some sort of clip does the rounds on Twitter and stuff, like, of the way they work. Like, it's a disgrace how hard some of their players work. Like Martin Keown, that clip there that starts with Martin Keown in corner forward, and like, he's just rabid, like, and it goes all the way out, and it's James Maher turns it over. Paddy Deegan brings it back up the field and gives it back, and who does he give it to score? It's Martin Keown. You're just like, Jesus Christ, like, where did he come out of? Like, and like, he's been one of their big up and coming young players the last couple of years. Incredible. And then, like, look, TJ, we were on about him there a couple of weeks ago. Like, my thing with TJ is, like, I said it to anyone that'll listen, basically, like, is that, like, he works like a fella who's shite at hurling, if that makes sense. Like, when he's playing, like, he works like the fella who's there because he's shite. And he's like, and he's one of the best ever to play it. But like, I'm just looking at him like, Jesus Christ, like good players like him don't work as hard as he does in game. Like, or not many of them anyway. Like, just incredible, like, what he goes through. Like, he's just like, I think myself and Murph are going to start up our own little Stockholm Syndrome club.
Kilkenny Appreciation Society.
Yeah, just
I know. I need to bring Derek in here to provide a little bit of sanity here, Derek. These hasn't been like this all summer, so you might need to give us a few negatives on Kilkenny. In fairness, one thing you could bring up is that Dublin had a couple of COVID issues and an injury early on as well. So are the boys getting a bit too carried away about Kilkenny?
No, I think I said it. Look, there was a brilliant article on Saturday in the Examiner, Enda McAvoy wrote an article about Kilkenny producing really good hurlers under the radar almost. And it would be something that I would know of here in school. I suppose we're in De La Salle here in Waterford, and we draw a lot from South Kilkenny, like Piltown, Munkine, Seabrew. We get a lot of good hurlers in from, and we welcome them in, you know, we have a huge welcome for them particularly, you know, because they add to the classroom, but they add particularly to the hurling fields. And I just made a point even there on Saturday. We won the All-Ireland Colleges in 07 and 08. You know, with 13 guys from Waterford, with two from Kilkenny on each of the teams. They were stars for Kilkenny minors, but they actually never played senior afterwards. The point being, I suppose, is that there are a lot of guys in Kilkenny that, you know, they fade away, but there's lots of hurlers. The machine nations are such that the comparisons with Henrys and Eddie Brennans, and Richie Powers and Owen Arkins, it doesn't mean the Mossy Keones and the James Bergens are not really good hurlers in their own right when they compare to other hurlers. Now, having said all that, I still think there's a little bit of a disparity between the Munster teams and the Leinster teams. I really do now. And I include Kilkenny in that bracket. Are Kilkenny capable, like Murph said there, of beating a Munster team in a semi-final and a one-off performance? I think they are. And I think they're right up there, right? But I do think that there are a couple of teams that are ahead of them and could trouble them in a different scenario, in a different situation. And I go back to even our own semi-final against Kilkenny last year, albeit Kilkenny up at 7 or 8 points at halftime. And they love hearing that, and they love hearing more in the next few weeks of, and it's a bit of a difference in the quality of standards between Munster and Leinster, because they will prime themselves for a Limerick-like performance of 19, if you like, where they came to ambush Limerick, but they weren't able to follow it up against Tipperary, albeit Richie Hogan sent off. So negatives for Kilkenny. Last year I would have said a pace deficit in the back line, but Hugh Lawler, Paddy, I love Paddy Deegan, you know. have they found their Dermot Burns and James Maher's relocation to right half back? You know, long range point score from right half back, scored 3 points the weekend. I love Paddy Deegan, I love the ordinariness of him, if that makes sense. You know, just that kind of brings fight, brings kind of aggression, gets on a load of ball, and just looks like he's going to give you absolutely everything he has every time he goes out.
Derek, it sounds like you're in the group with myself and Jamie as well, the Kilkenny Appreciation Society. We welcome all comers.
He's getting there. That this is like the first symptoms, like, this is
exactly
the dry cough.
Waterford have Galway, Derek, in the qualifiers. And I mean, you know, if you were looking for like major positives after the disappointment of leaving the Munster Championship, I suppose you didn't see that on Saturday, having gotten, I think, whatever it was, 116 to 11 points at halftime, and really getting taken into a massive battle by Laois. They're going to have to try and find some form from somewhere ahead of Saturday.
Yeah, and herein lies the contradiction, I suppose. That's where I actually think Waterford are at their most dangerous, believe it or not, given the kind of, I actually don't think we're a team that, I think one-off performances will, you know, we can build ourselves towards a one-off performance. And call me the eternal optimist, but that's what I think is coming. I actually was saying, we were talking here last night, a few of the lads were here last night, we were talking and we're saying, I'd rather Galway than Cork, believe it or not. You know, we were just kind of, you know, on the back of, you know, there's the wounded Galway perhaps, but I wasn't on the Galway buzz the same as everybody else. I actually tipped Dublin to beat Galway in the Leinster semi-final. I wasn't on the buzz as much as everybody else was regards to the second team to Limerick, because a bar first 10 minutes against Limerick last year, I felt that if Limerick had been more clinical, that game was well out of sight in the semi-final last year. So I wasn't, and I think Waterford, even if you look at the first 25 minutes of the league game in Pier Stadium, that Waterford really hurt Galway. They really hurt Galway with their running game. And obviously then, at that day, Austin was centre back, I think, and Caelan Lyons was right half back, and I think now Éireann Daly has solidified that centre back. And Austin, obviously, the only thing I'd say about Waterford, what they have to do is, Austin played full forward at the weekend. Shane Bennett played left half back. Kevin Moran played left half forward. Patrick Curran played midfield. So there was change not for the sake of trying to find the formula, and the formula probably wasn't ultimately successful. So it's whether they change it now and go. I'd imagine, given the damage that Conor Whelan did in Pier Stadium against us, that they will, you know, the matchups will be central to their approach on Saturday. So, but I'd be very hopeful that Waterford, the only time we've lost in Championship, ironically, has been the semi or the All Ireland final in 2017, and to Galway. I'd fancy it now if I was Liam Cahill and the boys.
Sounds good. Jamie, quick one on Clare Cork, who've been drawn together as well.
Yeah, it's a tough draw for Cork, just with the way Clare are going, and like Murph said, they found a bit of support for Tony. Shanahan gives them balance, like that balance we were talking about earlier, in terms of they have an option long, and it opens things up for the smaller lads like Ryan Taylor, David Reedy, kind of around the field then. So I'd be kind of worried for Cork, to be honest with you. I mean, like, I would have boldly come on here a couple of weeks ago and said, if you keep Tony Kelly to 2 points from play, you'll beat Clare by 7 or 8. And you know, someone did keep them to 2 points, Tim, to 2 points from play, and they didn't beat them and didn't really get near beating them, like, in my eyes. So I think it's a very tough draw for Cork. I think the one thing that's there is Clare's half back line is very much there to be taken out and to be taken for a spin. I remain unconvinced by Conlon at centre back. It just doesn't do it for me. I'm doubling down on that now, having seen 3 performances. I know he got man of the match in the first one, but I was listening to the commentary at the weekend, and they were talking on Sky, and they were talking about it was this masterstroke, and I was kind of like, were you not watching the game last week against Tip? And I thought he was in big trouble again at the weekend. I thought Paddy Fitz is in big trouble. I don't think he's at that level. I think if Cork can target Clare's half back line, I think there's a huge chink in their armour there. But otherwise, other than that, I'd be quite worried for Cork. But hopefully, you know, on the back of an under 20 All Ireland, and I would expect Cork to be quite strong tomorrow night in the under 20s as well, that there's a little bit of a buzz about Cork hurling for a while. So cautiously optimistic.
Jamie, brilliant stuff. Derek, great stuff. We'll let you go and open some windows, let a bit of air in. Thanks a million. Cheers.
Thanks, lads.
Some lads.
Sport is a great thing, Pádraig County, especially hurling. Our sport, the greatest sport that was ever played by any man. They're getting their award today, mixed with this brilliant blend of youth, fire and enthusiasm, and so thrilled for them. Clare men, rivals of ours all our lives. But you know, the Cranberries go up around Crow Park. Dolores, one of their own, Pádraig. Magic, magic moment for them.
Well, it's a highly emotional scene.
Oh no, my stomach is burning here, lads. I tell you, we've been... oh dear.
Who's going to win it, guys?
Limerick.
Excuse me?
Dolores!
On your fire!
He didn't go to blow the onion bag off the back of the net. He went to place it to the corner.
Limerick are on the brink of a historic breakthrough at Croke Park.
Limerick better wake up here, because Galway are back in the game big time.
Cruised into the top of the net. Is there any into the drama, Pádraig?
And Galway are within one of Limerick.
It's hard to watch.
Oh, man, I don't know what to say here.
Could he possibly
from 2-3 metres outside his own 45. The greatest sport that was ever played by any man.
That's a massive ask.
If you wanted one man in the history of hurling to hit it for you, you might want it to be Joe Kenning.
I think the long wait is over.
How long is it again to wait?
Well, since 2007.
Well, 1973 is the last time they won.
Limerick have it. Limerick are coming away with
it. Yeah!
If the rest of the world only knew about this sport, this is incredible.
Limerick have beaten Galway. Woo! 1973.
Liam Sheedy may have felt like his team was destroyed and annihilated in the second half yesterday, but that's nothing to the feelings of powerlessness being felt by young international athletes around Europe who were caught up in the Irish athletics juggernaut over the weekend. Three gold medals on the same day at the European Under-20s. Rashida Adeleke, she took gold in the 200 metres to go with her 100 metres win from the day before. And if you've ever seen her race, her celebrations, I mean, she's cool as a cucumber when she just destroys these fields. It's amazing to watch. Keane McPhillips won the 1500 metres and Nick Griggs won the 3000 metres. I know what you're thinking, Murph, this is great. I mean, these people, but like, they're going to be out of the under 20 grade soon, so it's going to be swimming with the sharks with the big boys. Well, in Nick's case, he's 16 years of age, so he's still got a bit of improving to do after winning the 3000 metres. At that point, by the way, on Saturday night, we were top of the medals table. We ended up in third place behind
What are you talking about? I mean, I saw the screen grab. I've no further interest in how that medal table actually ended up.
If you look at all it closer, by the way. Yeah, but if you look at it closely as well, it's the way these tables work, right? It's all about the gold medals. So we didn't win any other medals, but that's all right. The likes of even after the end of the competition, France and Spain and Norway, everyone else in the top 10 actually had more medals overall than us. But look, don't forget, we're all Irish. You know, we don't piss around with silvers or bronzes. Yeah, it's about the gold.
We trade in gold only.
Seems bizarre that they couldn't find a place on the Irish Olympic relay team for Adeleke to get her some experience at the Olympics. But she doesn't care. Well, she probably does care, but she's already looking ahead. Paris 2024, you know we're on the rise, so just watch out, comes the rallying cry. And I do feel that history will judge this upcoming Olympic Games as the final Olympics before the age of Irish dominance of track and field. So enough hyperbole, and well done to all the young Irish athletes who blaze a trail over the last few days. Unbelievable stuff there in Tallinn. That's pretty much it. Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow, if that is, you're a Second Captain's World Service member.
Kyle Hayes beaten one, steps past the second, bounces the ball.
Keep going!
He's still going,
Keep
Kyle Hayes.
Going, Kyle!
14, Kyle! He goes to once more,
Kyle!
He's turned!
Yeah!
The best goal you'll ever see!
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's to persuade the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact? You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.